This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by the all-new Natural Light Natterdays. With a refreshing strawberry lemonade twist, it's Natterdays.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team that's on the way back, a College World Series title. Come on, stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
I do want to start just with the baseball news and dealing with the snubbing. And it's weird. And it's bad because, let's be honest, the fact that Arkansas was so well represented in the SEC rank in the awards, that list that was given out, that should be really the story. Arkansas in the second team All-SEC, Trevor Ezell, Casey Martin, Dominic Fletcher, Heston Kerstad, Matt Goodhart, and Matt Cronin. All on SEC team, second team. And then the freshman All-SEC team, Arkansas had Patrick Wicklander and Connor Noland. Christian Franklin was always on there too. Pretty well represented. Even the defensive All-SEC team had Trevor Ezell and Dominic Fletcher on it. But you're telling me that Isaiah Campbell, who has been the ace for Arkansas, who posted a win-loss record this year of 10-1, a better record than any other pitcher, starting pitcher at least, in the SEC, a guy who had 97 strikeouts, only 15 batters walked, pitched 90 innings, which is tied for the most in the SEC. 90 innings. And he doesn't even get a sniff? He doesn't even get mentioned anywhere? I don't understand that. Listen, the SEC is the creme de la creme when it comes to college baseball. It has some of the best players and specifically some of the best pitchers. There are some fantastic pitchers in the SEC. And to clarify, the two pitchers that were first team All-SEC were Ethan Small from Mississippi State and Emerson Hancock from Georgia. Ethan went 8-1 with an ERA of 1.84. Hancock went 8-2, 1.31. Okay. I can understand the logic behind that. I mean, those are great records. It's a great ERA. Both of those players, both those pitchers are on great baseball teams. I can live with that. But second team All-SEC was given to Zach Thompson from Kentucky, who went 6-1, not bad. An ERA of 2.4 and 90 innings pitched. And then TJ Sakima, is that how you say his name? Sakima, however you say it.
I thought it was Sikkema, but Sikkema? I could be wrong.
Hey, we all know what we're talking about. TJ, we'll call him, from Missouri, went 7-4, posted a 1.32 ERA. That's great. It's pretty solid. 88 innings pitched, not bad. But he gets second team All-SEC. And Isaiah Campbell gets nothing. I'm never going to be in conspiracies as far as, you know, people hate Arkansas or everything like that. I don't see it as that's the case. But you do have to kind of wonder in cases like this, like, how? How do you not give it to the guy who's the only pitcher in the SEC who's got double-digit wins? He's only lost one game. And in fact, when Arkansas went head-to-head against three of these pitchers, Arkansas went 2-1. 2-1. Like, those are just the things that I don't understand. In fact, Ethan Small, the number one pitcher, SEC all first team, Arkansas, his only one loss was to Arkansas. So, I don't understand it. I don't understand how it doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things, because Dave Van Horn's not going to care about this. Isaiah Campbell, I'm sure you've heard a little like the award, but I doubt that that's really where his focus is at. This is more of a fan thing, I think, in most cases. The players would love to have the award and be able to hold their hat on that, maybe put it on their resume one day. And it'd be nice. But it's just, I always wonder when you see something like this and you see a snub like this, because that is what it is. It is a snub. It makes you wonder, what went into the minds of those who were picking these players? And how did they go through the list and go through the stats and go through the seasons, go through the performances and say, you know what, Isaiah Campbell, you're not even the fifth best pitcher, starting pitcher in this league. Like, I'm sorry. Think about that. Isaiah Campbell, according to the people who voted on these players, Isaiah Campbell is not even the top five pitcher in the SEC. That just sounds wrong. So I was really disappointed to see that. Again, I know in the grand scheme it's not going to really matter. There's going to be a few things that are going to matter a lot more to Isaiah Campbell and to Dave Van Horn. But I think the SEC got this one wrong. I'm not even saying that Isaiah Campbell needs to be first team All-SEC. I don't think that needs to for sure happen. But to not even get a mention, I think is extremely, extremely disrespectful to Isaiah Campbell, the man. But you're hoping maybe he uses this a little motivation. Maybe he uses this as a little fire to go under his seat and to be able to perform really well in postseason play. We'll see how it goes. If I'm Isaiah Campbell, that's my motivation. That's something that could stir me up a little bit. But if you're a Razorback fan, you're really disappointed in the fact that Isaiah Campbell did not get any mention. But you had other players that did. And we'll talk about that and we'll get into that. And who knows, maybe I'm overlooking this. Maybe I'm wrong about this. And if I'm wrong about it, if you disagree with me, let me know.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by the all-new Natural Light Natterdays, a light lager brewed with a phenomenal strawberry lemonade flavor that's perfect for bringing the fun to every occasion. The new Natural Light Natterdays.
Touchdown, home!
Now, scheduling is, for whatever reason in this conference, a hot topic issue. And like, if you cover or if you follow college football, have you ever heard a story or have heard Paul Feinbaum or any ESPN national radio or whoever? Have you ever heard strength of schedule come into any sort of conversation with a team not from the SEC? I mean, seriously, it seems like the strength of schedule argument in football only comes up when it's dealing with SEC teams or how SEC teams aren't considered to have the toughest of conference schedules or non-conference schedules. Everyone says how easy it is in the SEC, yada, 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 all these things. And I don't know, maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I'm just weird, but I feel like the SEC, especially in this conference, it shouldn't matter, especially in the grand scheme of things. It shouldn't matter what your schedule is if you go undefeated because you're in the SEC. Now, just to give everybody a clue of what we're referring to, or at least what I'm referring to, is that yesterday on Feinbaum, they talked about this in CBSSports.com. I believe it's Tom Fernelli from that website put out the strength schedule rankings for SEC teams, ranked 1 through 14. And surprisingly, Arkansas was actually ranked at fourth, which made me kind of scratch my head at first because I'm like, wait a minute.
Not because of their non-conference.
Right. It can't be because they don't even play a Power 5 team in the non-conference slate. So what is it? And let's be honest, folks, their East opponents, it's Kentucky and Missouri. So it's not like that they're having to play Florida and Georgia in the East, but they have to play in the West. They have to play LSU. They have to play Alabama. They have to play Texas A&M. Those are the three teams that people feel like, I wouldn't say contending for an SEC title, all three of them at least, but they're going to be teams that are probably going to end up with 9-10-plus wins as the season comes to an end.
And where do they play two of those three games?
Talking about for Arkansas?
Yeah.
On the road.
On the road.
Yeah, at LSU and at Alabama.
And the other one's a neutral side in Jerry World. So I think that plays a lot into it because when you think about the toughest stadiums, not only in the SEC, but college football, Bryant-Denny and Death Valley are close to, and Death Valley is probably at the top of the list, and Bryant-Denny's top 10, top 7, depending on where you look at it. So, I mean, your tough games are on the road this year. You get Auburn at home, you get Mississippi State at home. We'll see how those teams end up doing. Joe Moorhead in his second year, Gus on the hot seat. But, I mean, your two probably toughest games are true road games, and that's never great.
Like, no.
You think about with Auburn having to play the two toughest teams in the SEC year after year, Georgia and Alabama. Like, Gus and Auburn, they're trying to get out of that series against Georgia, which I understand.
Yeah.
Like, having to do that with Kirby, what he's brought to the table with the Georgia Bulldogs. So, it's fun when you get to play Alabama and LSU at home, but then you look at the opposite side, having to play them on the road the following year. Not great.
No. And honestly, with like Arkansas' schedule, they're always going to play either both LSU and Alabama at home or on the road. Like, there's never any alternating years. That's how it's just going to be. And A&M being in the neutral site, you know, it's through 2024 at least.
See if that contract holds up.
I don't think it will, at least not from the A&M side. So we'll see how that plays out. But anyways, Arkansas is ranked fourth. But you know who's ranked dead last? Dead last in the SEC as far as strength of schedule goes. That is the Alabama Crimson Tide. And for whatever reason, and this is where it really baffles me and what really gets frustrating, people outside of the SEC love to hate on the SEC schedule, and I do not understand why. And like this year, for instance, there are people that are making fun of and hating on Alabama's schedule because instead of playing USC or Texas or Michigan or whoever, you know who their big Power 5 non-conference opponent is this year? Duke. And then, of course, they play in the SEC West, and their SEC East opponents, of course, against Tennessee, their permanent East Division rival, and South Carolina. Not the biggest deal. But to me, and this is where I get frustrated, to me, in the SEC specifically, strength of schedule means nothing. Nothing. You know why it means nothing? Because with the way that the SEC has been set up, with the way that they've been so dominant, with the way that the conference is at the highest competitive level, where there's no doubt that the most talent is in this conference. If you go undefeated, like say if Alabama had Arkansas schedule this year, where they didn't have to play a Power 5 opponent at all in their non-conference. They just played Colorado State. And say they were playing Missouri and Kentucky out of the East. And of course, instead of playing themselves, Alabama, they played Arkansas. So just switch it up there. But either way, if Alabama had Arkansas schedule this year and they went undefeated, would they get left out of the college football playoff? No. They wouldn't. So I don't understand why teams, especially from SEC, even the ACC, the way that they've competed, I'd even say the Big 12, would it not be smart to make your schedule as easy as you can get by with? Would it not make sense for you to want your schedule to be as easy as possible to give you the easiest path to winning your conference title and getting into the college football playoff? Like, I can understand maybe the Pac-12. And why they need some extra non-conference games to help them out because their conference is not that good and has not been that good for years.
Washington playing Auburn last year, Oregon playing them this year.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. But it's like, why would you not want to, as a school, as a coach, as a team, want to make your schedule easier for yourself? Because this isn't college basketball. This isn't college baseball where you need it for seeding, you need it for, you know, RPI issues, you need it for all that. If you go undefeated in a Power 5 conference, in this case the SEC, the rest of it doesn't matter. And you have no control over what the SEC schedule is. You have no control over that. That's the SEC. The SEC makes that happen for your team. So why would you not want to make your schedule as easy as possible for you to give you the easiest and best path towards the national championship? Why not?
Greg Sankey is always asked about why doesn't the SEC play a 9-team conference schedule, and for all intents and purposes, his answer is, why would we do that? I mean, he doesn't actually come out and say that specifically like I just said, but if you look at the SEC and the college football playoff, and let's be honest about this. The SEC's goal is to make the college football playoff every single year and potentially win a national championship.
Absolutely.
What team has, from what conference, has been the national championship every single year since the college football playoff inception?
Hasn't been an SEC. Are you talking about which team?
With the exception of the Oregon State, Ohio State.
Oregon, Ohio State, yeah.
With the exception,
I mean, it's been an
SEC
team.
So it's been an SEC team. But there's been an SEC team in every single college football playoff with the exception of that one championship.
Yeah.
If I'm doing that right in my head, because it's been Clemson.
They've always had representation of the Final Four.
Correct.
They've not always been in the championship game with that one year in Ohio State and Oregon.
And then you had the national championship with Georgia and Alabama 2 years ago, where two SEC teams make it all the way to the championship. So if you're Greg Sankey, if you're the rest of the SEC, if you're Herb Vincent, all those guys that work down there with the Southeastern Conference down in Hoover, why would you change anything? And you're going to get complaints from the Big Ten, the Big 12,
yeah,
the Pac-12, the ACC, and they're going to complain, they're going to moan. But for you, you're worried about your conference, and your conference is making a ton of money from the SEC network deal. You're competing for national championships in all three sports, and I know we're just predicated on football right now, but why would you change up your conference alignment? Why would you change up your conference scheduling when it's working right now?
Yeah.
That just doesn't make any sense. And you can argue it all you want, but Greg Sankey, then they got their hands up. Like,
yeah,
we like what we're doing. We like what we're
doing. And it's working. And if it's not broke, don't fix it. And this is where it comes. And it's almost, I know what it comes down to. I know what the core reason behind people outside the SEC who have problems with the scheduling of football teams in the SEC. Their problem is they're not in the SEC and they don't get that benefit. They don't get that luxury. They don't get that praise. They don't get any of that. And so they're always going to try to find ways to pick apart or discredit what the SEC is. I mean, and that's what it comes down to. Because I've even had conversations with people who are fans of Big Ten teams, for instance, like a friend of mine who's actually a big-time Michigan fan. And he's one of those that is always critical of the SEC schedule. I'm like, why do you care? Why does it matter?
Well,
because I can understand it if the SEC, if Alabama went undefeated this year with Duke on their schedule, and then Michigan went undefeated, I don't even know who their non-conference game is this year. I'm sure they have some big one. But say if they lost that game to the Power 5 non-conference opponent.
Isn't it Notre Dame?
I guess it is Notre Dame. I thought they had another one too. But just say they lost Notre Dame. Say that was their only loss. And then Alabama takes the spot of Michigan in the college football playoff because of that. Maybe then you'd actually have an excuse or have a reason to be upset. But when it comes to scheduling, this stuff is made so far in advance. Like, the past few weeks, we've been talking about scheduled games that are happening in 2036. Like, they've scheduled games that far ahead because that's how you have to schedule these big-time opponents. And to me, let me put it this way. If the college football playoff was eight teams, for instance, it was eight teams where conference champions got automatic bids, with strength of schedule even be a conversation?
It still would be, but...
Well, yeah, it would be, but I think it would be more for just those at-large teams than it would be for actual conference champions.
You need to tell your Michigan friend, he's got a lot more to worry about, like beating Ohio State.
Yeah.
So if he
not
really
much
wants
luck
to,
there.
If he really wants to complain and point to non-conference games, you got to say that. And I think because I know we're coming up on a break, last thing we'll kind of touch on is if Greg Sankey and these guys, like, again, you just can't. There's no point. And with Alabama, it's not. I know you got Duke this year, which is not the David Cutcliffe and his squad. It's not like they're the most ominous threat that Alabama's ever faced, but it's not. They played Penn State, they played USC, they played Florida State. If you're Alabama, it's hard to schedule. Like, no one wants to play you.
Yeah.
Because it's an automatic loss.
Especially early in the season. And even when they scheduled Louisville, they scheduled it during the time when Louisville was competing. It's like, it's not Alabama's fault that Louisville sucked last year.
They beat the tar out of it. And so Alabama, of Nick Saban's losses, 15 of the 16 have been ranked. 15 of the 16. So early on, like, you're as a coach or an athletic director, you're just taking an L that first opening weekend or the second opening weekend, whatever you want to play. So Big Ten fans, ACC fans, all these people can complain, but it also, it's on you for not scheduling Alabama.
Yeah.
It's on you for not scheduling LSU. It's a two-way street. It's not just the SEC not scheduling these tough non-conference games. It's these other conferences unwilling to play SEC teams because they know how good they actually are, and they don't want to own up to actually playing them.
Yeah. And one of the things that, when looking in on this, one of the things my Michigan friend that he is shows just how kind of stupid he is that he was criticizing Arkansas' schedule this year. And I said, bro, your team canceled on Arkansas. What were they supposed to do?
What did he say? What was his retort to that?
Well, there surely was another team out there. Yeah, well, Colorado State was all you got. And honestly, given Arkansas's current state of affairs, it probably was a blessing in disguise in the fact that they are playing Colorado State.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by the all-new Natural Light Natterdays, the new beer of the summer, with a refreshing strawberry lemonade twist. Natterdays, fun for every occasion.
They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house.
In college football, and this is the transition I want to make, in college football, it's an ever-flowing, ever-evolutionized type of game where you're constantly trying to find ways to get better, but at the same time understanding that the way you're doing things is great as it is. Like, if you think about college football in general right now, is there anything about college football right now that you say, you know what, this is an absolute lingering problem that needs to be fixed right now because the product on the field is suffering from it?
I think targeting, but that's a
right. But as far as do you feel like, because I agree with you, targeting needs to be fixed and that whole thing's a mess. But would you say that targeting is taking away from the product on the field, taking away from college football and the game itself? I mean, I would have a hard time going that far, and it can have an impact on it. Don't get me wrong. But I guess my point is that if of all the issues that college football could have or a sport could have, if their biggest issue is targeting, which even on that, they're working towards fixing it. Like, they're putting in more rules. They're putting in more ways to figure it out and to try to make it better for everybody involved. Is that, that's the way I want to see it, and that's the way I want them to handle it. It's where they're constantly wanting to get better, even though you're the best. Because let's be honest, folks. College football among college sports is the best. In fact, I guess if you ranked it from the national perspective of interest, I think the NFL is still number one. I'd say, I mean, what would be number two? Would it be Major League Baseball? Maybe the NBA?
National interest? No, it's, you said the...
The NFL's number one.
I thought college football was
second. You think college, you think? I mean, I'm just...
According to ratings or what?
Yeah, I mean, ratings can be a big factor into it, but...
I thought it went, I could be wrong on this, I'd have to look this back up, but I thought it went NFL, college football, NBA, and then MLB, and then...
Okay. And you may be right. Like I said, I'm just going off of what my perspective is from what people gain the most national interest in. But the NFL is number one far and away. It's not even close.
Not the NBA. Let's go and stress that.
It's the NFL. That is where it's the NFL. They are the kings. But college football over the past few decades has elevated its game because it's the game of football for one. Like, the most popular sports, duh, is the game of football because that is America's, by and large, their favorite sport and the sport that they enjoy the most. And college football has done a great job of elevating their product where it comes to the talent, when it comes to the intrigue, to in a lot of ways make tremendous strides in closing the gap between the NFL and college football. Because listen, here in the state of Arkansas, it's college football. NFL, there's a lot of fans of the NFL out there. Maybe it's a secondary sport for you. Maybe you're a Cowboys fan, whatever. But college football still reigns supreme in this state, and it reigns supreme in a lot of these states, you know, because the NFL is just a big market sport. College football, in a lot of cases, are state sports. Arkansas is a college sports state. Mississippi is a college sports state. Alabama is a college sports state. Like, most of these places, and there are a few places, like Georgia has NFL teams in Atlanta. You have Louisiana that has NFL and pro teams in New Orleans. Like, those are always going to get part of the pie.
But even in those states, there's a vast majority, maybe not the entire vast majority, but there's a good amount of people that heavily support those college football teams.
Right, and it's grown, and the reason it has grown is because of the product on the field has been fantastic. There's been drama. There's been storyline. There's been intrigue. And that's what makes this sport great. And that's why it's like I always appreciate, we like to hate on the NCAA. We like to hate on the rules and the officials and all that. But I appreciate the constant efforts to try to continue to make the game better. You mentioned targeting. It's still, and we'll see how it goes this year. They've made some adjustments to targeting, but they're at least trying. They're at least they understand that there's a problem and they're trying to fix it. They've added in replay. They've added in television where you can watch. If you're in the SEC, every single game of yours is on television. I mean, they have done things by and large to make the product better and more accessible for fans. And I think that that is what has been able to elevate the interest and especially the national interest. Because let's be honest, Ty, I mean, how many times have you seen Monday night football games, which used to, or Sunday, even Sunday night, I think it's more Monday night, but Monday night football used to be the must-watch sporting event every week.
Correct.
Like, well, I mean, that's where it's at. But how many times have you seen Jacksonville and Cleveland type games on Monday night football? Maybe not that bad, but still games that don't do anything for
you. Yeah, I know what you mean. And it's the Monday night football has really fallen out of favor. And it's not just people point to, well, the fact that you had Jason Witten and just a catastrophe of broadcasting crew and studio this year. It was before that. It just, it's fallen out of favor. Sunday night football, I think, is the premier game to watch in the NFL each week. And then for our part of the state and really our part of the Southeastern Conference where we live, it's that 2:30 CBS game, which I'm kind of curious to see. I don't know if you saw that Fox is putting their primetime game now at 11 o'clock to kind of help people. They want to elevate their college football game day show with Meyer, Brady Quinn, Matt Leiner, Reggie Bush, and Rob Stone. They want to elevate that, and so they want people to watch that and then watch their game. And so I'm kind of curious how that works, but yeah, it's a 2:30 game. It's a 2:30 CBS game. That's what I'm tuned into every single Saturday. Unless we have a post-game show, unless we have a pre-game show. But even then, I'm still got on the TV here.
Yeah, well, because that's where college football, I think, is also standing alone compared to what the NFL has done because they highlight their strengths. They highlight their moneymakers. They highlight the box office type of games and type of players and type of teams better than in a lot of cases what the NFL does because, you know, like you said, at 2:30 on CBS, that's going to be, more often than not, the best, most anticipated matchup of any team in the SEC, and in a lot of cases, any team in the country. Mm-hmm. You know that college game day in the mornings is going to be at, again, more often than not, not every time, but more often than not, at the biggest game and the biggest matchup of that weekend. You know that at 6 p.m. that night in prime time, there are going to be great matchups at great atmospheres against great teams. Like, you just know that. But compared to what the NFL has done, you don't know what games are going to be great. You don't know because there could be a great game that happens. Like the best matchup could happen at 11 a.m. in the NFL. You could have it on that on a Sunday. Or it could happen on Sunday Night Football. Like you just don't know. And so that's where I feel like college football has done a good job and is continuing to do a good job of highlighting strengths, highlighting the biggest and best. Not protecting them, but highlighting them.
And I think also, I mentioned the broadcast a little bit, and this isn't, it's not a like the overlying factor, it's not the biggest one, but you think about the broadcasters that are calling each game. You got Joel Klatt and Gus Johnson calling Fox Game of the Day, which is now going to be 11. Gus Johnson's my favorite broadcaster. You think about the 2:30, Brad Nessler. People in these parts love Brad Nessler. You think about so many great, iconic Arkansas football and basketball games he's been a part of with Gary Danielson. And then you think about the night game with Chris Fowler and Herbie. I know people in these parts aren't the biggest fan of Herbie, and I'm not a huge Fowler guy, but they do a good job. And then also, on the other side, Joe Test, now with Monday Night Football, so you now have, I believe, Sean McDonough and Todd Blackledge. I mean, that's a really good broadcasting team, so that elevates, and they're college football central.
Yeah.
So that elevates the game that's being broadcasted when you have premier broadcasters, and the sideline reporters, Jamie Erdahl, and who does the CBS game, and others, they help that as well. So that also plays into the fact that you have a really good team of broadcasters that are calling college football games.
Yeah. I mean, they have done a good job of all of that and encompassing it all, and they're consistently trying to get better for it. And so my whole point in starting this and bringing this up is going back and reverting back to the SEC. Because I will say this, and maybe I don't think we'll ever have a way of knowing for sure. Maybe it's hindsight, maybe. But I feel like college football made its biggest strides and grew its best and most efficiently when the SEC was a conference as a whole that grew and promoted themselves efficiently. I feel like college football was fine. College football was great. People still watched it late 90s, early 2000s. It was still watched. It was still enjoyed. But the level that it's at today, I think college football owns a huge debt to the SEC, not only because of the fans that come along with it and the passion that they have, because let's be honest, there's more passion in the SEC for their fan, for their teams than anywhere else, by and large. But I think the dominance and the consistent play, national competitiveness of this conference at the highest of levels, as well as the parity of other teams. I know it's been Alabama mainly in the past few years, but you were looking at times where Auburn won a title, Florida won a title, LSU won a title. You had all those things going for it, and it provided intrigue into something that was so strong that was seemed like it was unbeatable, that people were constantly tuning in to see, will this be the year that somebody else not from the SEC wins it? Because what was it, seven straight national titles? Eight, it was a lot.
06 Florida, 07 LSU, 08 Florida, 09 Alabama, 2010 Auburn, 2010, 2011 Alabama. I think Alabama won 2012.
Yep.
2013 Florida State, 2014. Yeah. Was that Ohio State's first? No, Alabama won 2014, then 2015 Ohio State, 2016 Alabama, 2017 Clemson, 2018 Alabama.
Yeah.
And then 2019 Clemson.
Yeah.
So like,
so pretty much like 90%. Yeah, it sounds right to me. 90% of it was from the SEC. And you know, people can hate on the SEC. People like to tear down the SEC. It goes back to our talk about scheduling, how people, it only, strength of schedule only matters when it comes to the SEC. So, okay, that's fine. But everyone's trying to be the SEC, and the SEC is the reason, in my mind, that college football is as watched, is as interesting, and is as entertaining right now because of the SEC. If it wasn't for the SEC and their dominance, I don't think college football would be in the same place that you'd see it at. You'd probably still be seeing Notre Dame and Ohio State and teams like that getting all the praise and glory, but they are not big enough to carry their own water. Teams are not big enough as a brand to carry it to what the next to the conference of the SEC.
How did that work out for Notre Dame in 2012? 35-3 was it the final score?
No, it was more than that. I know that Alabama was up 42-0. I know they were up 42-0 at one point. I have to look it up. But yeah, hasn't gone well for them.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by the all-new Natural Light Natterdays, the new beer of the summer.
Welcome in Matt Moscona of After Further Review on ESPN 104.5 in Baton Rouge. Matt, really appreciate you joining us. How are you doing this morning, man?
John, I'm great, man. Always good to talk to you, bud.
Hey, it's always good to talk to you, man. And I know that football season is months away, and I'm sure baseball season's still in full swing down there just like it is up here. But it's always going to be fun to talk a little football. But, you know, something we were bringing up about LSU and Ed Orgeron is, I'll fully admit, man, I wasn't sure about Ed Orgeron when he was hired at LSU. I didn't know how it would go, how it would last, but he's gotten better every year. And the way that season ended last year, obviously that seven overtime game was a brutal one. But the way it ended last year and the hype that's coming along with it and some of the changes and maneuvers and adjustments Ed Orgeron has made in this upcoming season, I'm sure excitement for LSU football is starting to really rev up, and it's probably getting close to an all-time high right now, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, certainly in Ed's time here, there's the most optimism that they've had, and now going into his third full season. You know, last, it's just a polar opposite from, you know, like when you and I were in Atlanta last year at Media Days having conversations about that team. I mean, they had lost so much, and the schedule was brutal, and you know, they're coming off a season where they had lost to Troy and gotten blown out by Mississippi State, and the feeling around the program was overtly negative, and it very much felt like Ed was coaching for his job. Well, you flip that into a 9-3 season. You win a New Year's Six game. You're at 10-3. They return their starting quarterback and pretty much everybody. I mean, I know you lose Devin White and Greedy Williams. And I don't mean to minimize that because those are two great players. But the way LSU's recruited, I mean, they've got five star guys at both positions to replace those guys. So, I mean, and John, just when you consider the schedule, man. Like Georgia rotates off and Vanderbilt rotates on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Florida, Auburn, A&M all come to Baton Rouge this year. I mean, they do have to go to Alabama, and I don't see LSU winning that game. But other than that, I mean, Vegas will have LSU favored in every other game they play. So the point is the expectations are just light years from where they were a year ago at this time.
So, well, that was actually going to be my next question as far as the expectations go. I mean, what's reasonable here? Is it going to be like 11, 12-win season? Are fans expecting to have a true legitimate shot of maybe making it into the college football playoff? Just what is the high expectation that fans have right now?
Well, I guess you have to define what's reasonable, right, or what's realistic for fans. I mean, it's look, Johnny, you know this as well as I do. You can sit here today on May 21st and say any fan can go, yeah, 10-2. But the week they lose those two games, people are going to be pissed. That's just the way fans are. It's like, well, you said 10-2. But, look, listen, it's impossible for me to imagine LSU beating Alabama. They've lost 8 straight. It's like, John, I'm not going to pick them to win that game again until they do it. It's just there's a physical hurdle. There's a mental hurdle. There's just a lot there that LSU can't clear with Alabama right now. So you look at every other game, and they're all winnable. But it's the SEC and it's a grind. Like, is Florida capable of coming to Baton Rouge and beating LSU? Sure. I mean, could LSU trip up at Texas in week 2? Yeah. I mean, all of that could happen, but they could also win all those games. I mean, I would say ceiling for this team, 11-1, anything worse than 9-3. And I think there's just bitter disappointment around here.
Speaking with Matt Moscona, the host of After Further Review on ESPN 104 of Baton Rouge, right here on the Morning Rush this morning. Matt, just looking at the schedule and knowing what type of team that LSU is returning from last season, I mean, if LSU was going to beat Alabama this year, if they were going to take that next big step this year, what is it that's going to be the difference from last year? What position, what player, what coach? Who is going to be the difference maker in taking the team from last year that won 10 games to making the team win 12, maybe even 13-plus games this year?
Well, remember, they got shut out at home by Alabama. So if they're going to beat Alabama, they got to score.
Yeah.
The big change that they made, John, is they hired Joe Brady. And so a lot of people don't know his name, and I understand that. He was an assistant on Sean Payton's staff with the Saints. He's 28 years old. He is one of these, like, you know, wunderkind-type guys on the offensive side of the ball. He played at William & Mary collegiately. If you watched any of the Saints last year, you know all the RPO stuff they did with Taysom Hill, if mm-hmm. you're familiar with that?
Right.
Like, that was all Joe Brady. So last year in the offseason, the Saints staff spent a day, or LSU staff spent a day with Saints, and they were very impressed with Joe Brady. So I think they eyed this move all along. Steve Ensminger is still the offensive coordinator, but Brady, they've given him the title as passing game coordinator. And by all accounts, he ran about 75% of the offensive practice during spring drills to implement this new system. And John, I mean, I know I feel like we say it every year with LSU, is this final of the year they get the offense going. Like, I get it. For everyone who's skeptical, you're right to be. But in the spring game this year, I mean, just understand this. Understand what I'm about to say to you. LSU football in their spring game this year did not take one snap under center.
Wow.
Like, LSU, not Texas Tech. LSU football did not take a single snap under center in their spring game. So now how much of that translates into the fall? How efficient are they at it? I mean, that's all legitimate questions, and we'll see as the season moves along. But for the first time in probably 2 decades, there seems to be a real legitimate commitment to modernizing this offense. Like, Ed Orgeron says, like, we do not have a fullback on this team anymore. Like, the position of fullback does not exist at LSU anymore. So They seem committed to doing something different, recognizing what they're doing isn't working offensively to beat the best teams on their schedule. So we'll see if it works, man. But they seem committed to doing something different.
Well, Matt, what would you say would be this team's biggest weakness that they have? Because LSU, obviously, they recruit really well every year. They have a lot of talent. You mentioned some of the offensive changes that they've been going through. But just from what you've gathered and what you've seen through spring practice heading into fall camp, what would you say is your biggest concern with this Tiger football team?
Yeah, it's the offensive line, and that's a bad place to be weak. And, you know, John, they return everybody on the O-line, but when you return everybody from a bad unit, does that mean you're better just because they're a year older? I mean, you hope so, but they were one of the worst teams in the country last year as far as sacks allowed. They have to be better there, quite honestly. And part of maybe one of the reasons for optimism around here is the fact that with the the new concepts offensively. I mean, just think Drew Brees. One of the reasons that, and I'm not saying Joe Burrow is Drew Brees, but one of the reasons that Brees is sacked so seldom is that the passing game is an extension of the running game, and he gets rid of the ball very quickly. And I think that's in large part what this offense is looking to do as well, maybe to alleviate some of that pressure on the offensive line. But if you want, like, where is the weakness? I mean, it was that offensive line a year ago, and they got to be better. I mean, they have to be, because they weren't good enough last year to beat teams like Alabama or the best teams on their schedule.
Well, Matt, you know, I got to ask you about the Arkansas Razorback game and the quote unquote golden boot between these two teams that has played every single.
You can have it, John. Yeah. You can keep the boot. Like, yeah. I'd be happy if LSU wins the game, but you can have the boot.
I think it's how pretty much everybody is.
Dude, melt it down. Let's John, you and I will steal the boot. We'll melt it down. I know a guy that owns a We Buy Gold shop. We'll go sell it. You and I will split the cash.
Hey, I'm all for it, man, because it's probably worth a lot as far as the gold that has plated in it. But, hey, I'm like, it's the same way. So, and it's always fun to talk about this game because of that. But it's also one of those things where the Razorbacks last year, they only lost to LSU by a touchdown. Now, granted, LSU was in command of the game for the most part, but it was a closer game than what most people thought, at least going into it. Arkansas was just historically awful, went 2-10 last year. People are hoping for better. Yeah. But just in your thoughts, that game is going to be in LSU or at LSU. It's going to be right before the big game against Texas A&M second to last week of the season. Just what's your overall thought on that matchup as far as Arkansas goes, and just your feelings on the second year of Chad Morris?
I think the Chad Morris hire is absolutely the right kind of hire for Arkansas. Like, Brett Bielema was trying to do what Alabama did and what LSU had done successfully for a while, and it's just you're not ever going to be able to recruit. I don't mean you. I'm just saying, you know, right. just in general, programs that don't have a built-in recruiting advantage will never be able to recruit at that level to be able to compete with that style of football with an Alabama or even a Georgia. At times, LSU did that really successfully. They obviously don't now. But I think you have to – I don't want to say gimmicky, because that makes it sound sort of insincere, but I think you need a different concept offensively, and I think Chad Morris is the right kind of hire. I don't have any doubts that he's going to do what he does really well there. Will Arkansas become a championship-level program? I don't know. It's really hard to imagine anybody, you know, usurping Alabama at this point in the West. I mean, at some point, someone else is going to have to win. It just feels like that's not anytime soon. I'm curious about this Arkansas team. I mean, I know they got a couple of transfer quarterbacks in there to see who wins that gig, but it feels like if Chad Morris ever gets his guys, I know they got a kid from SMU transferred in. It's like if he ever gets his guys in there that know how to run his concepts and do it efficiently, I think they can be really good. And they're probably, I mean, I would think if you want to comp, John, I would say look at what Ole Miss was with Hugh Freeze. And I think Arkansas can be that. And I mean, Ole Miss beat Alabama a couple of times. Mm-hmm. They gave a lot of people headaches. They, you know, they won a Sugar Bowl. I mean, it's, you can say what you want about Q and his recruiting or his little black book or whatever the case may be. But the fact of the matter is, he's a good football coach, and he brought the kind of style you need to be successful at a place where you're maybe at a little bit of a disadvantage recruiting. I don't think that's being disrespectful. I mean, I think you can understand that the in-state recruiting base in Arkansas isn't what it is in a Florida or a Georgia or a Louisiana or a Texas. So, but I think it's the right kind of hire. And if Arkansas fans are patient with Chad Morris, I think he's going to do really well there, man.
Well, hey, I mean, at this point in time, since Arkansas is coming off a 2-10 season, I think most Razorback fans would sign up for a Hugh Freeze type of success right now. So they're just looking to make a bowl game this year, and that's kind of the hope and goal. But I think some people are still on Chad Moore, still think that he can get the job done, but we'll see how it plays out, that is for sure. Matt Moscona, host of After Further Review on ESPN Baton Rouge, covering LSU. Really appreciate you hopping on with us, Matt, and if I get a hold of that trophy, man, I'll let you know, and we'll find your guy, all right?
Done. Thanks, John.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Like the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast? Check out the Halftime Pod at hitthatline.com.